Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the AgView Pitch. We're heading into a new marketing week, April 15th through the 19th. Looks like another full marketing week. Looks like another week where guys are either going to be planting or going to be wish they were planting. And depends on a lot of the weather stuff going through. And we're lucky enough to have with us today Mark Welch at Texas A&M. Mark, how's it going today?
Great. Chris, good to be with you today. Appreciate it.
Well, it's awesome to have you on here today. In our world, we are just on the verge of getting some planters rolling. I think the first of this week, around the 15th, is kind of the planting date for the area that I'm in on corn. I think we'll see a lot of planters rolling, although there's rain in the forecast. And that always happens. You know, we don't get rain, we don't get rain. And then about the time you want planters to roll, you start getting some water. So I guess we'll take it when we can get it. But I guess what I'd like to do to start the conversation is go back in time a little bit. We had that prospective planting report, acres, what farmers are going to do, and kind of go back a little bit and think about the impact of that, what that might be having right now. And as we go into planting season with the markets and perspective versus reality. So go ahead and give us your two cents on the acres side of the equation here.
Yeah, I think there's several pieces of information that are maybe starting to set us up for kind of what the production picture might look like for 2024. And, you know, one key piece of that was the survey that USDA conducts in the latter part of February and the first part of March, asking farmers what their intentions are for the 2024 crop year. And the kind of the headlines coming after that report were, where did all the acres go? We came in with 1 million fewer acres of corn and 1 million fewer acres of soybeans than if you compare that survey number to what USDA had plugged into their balance sheet back at the February Outlook Conference. So that was kind of the benchmark we were working off of.
Right.
And then came out then with a couple million acres not accounted for. The crops that I track are six primary crops: corn and soybeans, wheat, cotton, grain, sorghum, and rice. You take those six crops, and those added up to about 244 million acres in the prospective planting acre survey. Last year, we planted about 250 million. So we're down significantly from the 23 planting totals. But if you look at that 244 million of those six crops, if you compare that to the 10-year average of those same six crops, the 10-year average is 244.6. So it's, you know, right in the ballpark. If you look at the average of those six crops since 2006, so I'm looking at the biofuel era, the average is 244.4. So again, we're kind of about where you kind of ought to be. And if you go all the way back then, I like to use as a reference year 1996. New farm bill, freedom to farm. We got away from, you know, diverted acres, allotments, set asides, you know, let the market determine, plant what you want to plant. The average since 1996 is 243.6. So, you know, stepping back a little bit, that 244 number for those six crops is not really out of line with where we've been for 20, almost 30 years now. And I think the other feature would be that this is an intentions survey. We'll get a much clearer picture toward the end of June with the acreage report. It's not uncommon to gain or lose 1 million acres of corn by the time we get to the end of the year from what farmers said they were going to plant back in March. So it could still go either way. And I don't know what y'all are seeing up in y'all's part of the world, but yet in Texas, we've planted a good bill of our dry land crop for corn and cotton in Central Texas down along the coast. You know, our season is well underway, but we've got a big production area up there in the high plains, irrigated corn, irrigated cotton. I think there's still a lot of uncertainty of just which way to go this year. And so I think there may be other areas in the U.S. that are that way as well, with nothing really looking great. When you look at put your budgets together and look at that number that comes out the bottom of that budget for net revenue,
right?
I think there's still just a lot of uncertainty, especially if you go back to late February, early March. So could we gain a couple of million acres? I think we could, or certainly shift around what we've got. But if we stayed right where we are, if we don't change that 244, it's not a big diversion from where we've been over, again, go back the last 20, 25, 30 years.
So where do you think those acres went? I mean, why was that gone?
Right. And I don't know about acres that we tend to see when prices are kind of like they are now. We just have fewer acres that are seem to be reported. And do those show up as what we're seeing in Texas is a significant increase in our forage crops. We've got a million more acres of hay reported as hay than we had 2 years ago. And so we have opportunities to take wheat, grain, sorghum, utilize those as forage crops, either for silage or just for grazing, as well as baling those, with the drought that we've been in the last couple of years, really tight feed supplies. And so I think that's just looking in our backyard, that's the kind of area that I would look to of if we've had some changes in response to the weather, in response to markets, record high cattle prices, really tight feed supplies. There might be some shifts that I'll make to focus on that market when the corn for grain and wheat for grain and grain sorghum just don't look that attractive right now.
Yeah, on the acres, there was a time frame, I don't remember exactly, where cotton was pretty high, and I had ran some numbers with some of our clients that are cotton and corn, and they were leaning pretty heavy into the cotton. And that's what kind of was making me think a lot of those cotton corn acres that can go either way might lean more towards the cotton just because there was a better margin there than the corn. So I guess time will tell, if that actually follows through. And then of course, if you are going to shift those acres and you make that decision, you kind of need to make the sale. And then when cotton came back down, if they didn't make that decision and then go ahead and sell, and that's always the threat when you're sitting there debating on crop rotation. Should I go with crop A, B, or C? And say crop C has got the advantage, and you're thinking, well, I'm going to shift some of those acres from A and B over to C. And you, in your mind, you change them, but you don't make the sale, and then the price evens back out again. You still haven't accomplished anything. And so I think that's a lesson I think for all of us to kind of pay attention to whenever we're doing those acre shifts, right? When you're switching from one to the other, sell some of it so that the commitment is made. But I think
Right. If that's the signal and that's what you're responding to, the market's telling you we need more of this and less of that. That's great. And respond to those, but what did you do about it? Right. Did you actually step out and capture some of that rather than just doing it on pure speculation? Because like you say, it tends to level out over time.
So, couple of things I want to quiz you on, I guess. More so, first, I want to ask a question, and I didn't tell you this ahead of time, but it just kind of occurred to me. If you look at the general economy, or I should say the commodity index, you look where energy's at and all these things, it just seems like all of the commodities are really pretty strong. But then when you look at grains and cotton, even, and some of the ag commodities, they kind of suck.
Right,
So
well, right.
what is, any thought on what's going on there? Is it just that the funds are just disinterested in the ag side of things, and they're super short on corn right now and stuff? Talk a little bit about kind of your perspective with what's going on. Any thoughts on any of that?
Yeah, and that is, so dramatic to see as you just mentioned those reports that come out. We get those on, Friday afternoons about 2:30 from the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, and you look at the commitment of traders and the net short positions, those positions they've taken to sell corn and soybean futures contracts to be on the short side of the market, to be at, record levels being net short of those two commodities. Heavy selling going on in those markets. But yes, as you mentioned in it, but if you look at a basket of commodities, the allocation of dollars to different classes of commodities, and I haven't looked at those in a while. It's been several months of how, say, some of these index funds would allocate among all the baskets of things they could, the big basket of all the things they could put in there. Those are heavily dominated by energy commodities. So if you look at you look at crude oil and natural gas, and again, it's an energy component that is a very strong presence in that basket. So then the ag commodities would be, of course, much, much smaller. And then even within the ag commodities, some of the grains we're struggling. Cotton is, as you just mentioned, is still doing relatively well relative to our grains. But obviously, livestock futures, look at the cattle market. It's had its ups and downs, but again, a relatively strong run right now in the cattle industry. So again, when you lump them all in together, the commodity indices would reflect, I think, still an inflationary environment in terms of pushing prices higher and higher, as we've seen in some recent inflation reports with gasoline and energy, and just the CPI that came out this last week, that it was one of the strongest components contributing to overall inflation in the U.S. economy as we move from February to March, and that reviving of energy prices. So, I just think within the context of the broader commodity complex, the grain portion is pulling us down, but there's a lot of other stuff in there that is still re reflecting an inflationary kind of picture.
So let me ask this, we're heading into a bit of a seasonal time frame where a lot of times we do see opportunities to price. Okay. We'll pick on corn. It seems like that's the crop we've been picking on here. So let's say that, there's a lot of old crop 2023 corn sitting out there yet. There's a tremendous amount of 24 unsold, in comparison to probably where we were a year ago with where sales were at versus where they are now for new crop, quote unquote. Typically, we see, sometime in that mid, late April through, say, the latter part of July or June is typically where you're going to see an opportunity to make sales. What are you looking for? And let me throw out there our cost of production right now with our clients, and people that listen to this every week have heard this a few times, but it's where we're at right now is 497 on corn, weighted average for our cost of production clients, and 1234 on soybeans. And I don't have a good enough number for wheat to throw a number out there, but what would you be looking for if you're a farmer and you're sitting there and that's your cost of production is just a tick under $5 and you got basis considerations and everything? You start making some sales at a negative number there, because the one fix is, and I'm sorry I keep rolling here, but I want to give you enough of this information before you answer. The other fix to this is, and in a lot of people's mind, is that we're going to have to out yield our way out of this. In other words, our cost of production is 497, let's say, but if we yield an extra, 15 bushel, now all of a sudden it's 467 or whatever, So talk a little bit about, what your perspective is and what kind of hope there might be and what producers should be thinking about as we get into this busy planting season and also a potential opportunity to make sales historically anyway.
And you've touched on a couple of key conversations we've been having with producers and the marketing meetings and things that I've been at the last several weeks. And one in the Southern Plains, and I think it probably applies to you guys as well, perhaps, is that another feature that's really looks different in 2024, at least down in our part of the world, is the growing climate, the weather outlook. We're coming out of a El Nino winter, which has put us in a much better moisture situation. Crops in Central Texas along the coast, they look great. Better moisture up in the high plains. And so we're kind of leaning toward what you just alluded to, that one way to get that break-even cost down is to get that yield up about 5 or 10%. And that can make up for quite a bit of marketing. In fact, probably the best marketing plan that we can have, number one, is to get that break-even cost down. And you do
Exactly.
that a couple of ways. You can boost production or lower cost, and even better if you can do both. Is there a way you can be a little more efficient on those inputs? And again, we're talking 2, 3, 4, or 5%, relatively small changes on our input cost side, wherever those costs, whether fixed, variable, whatever their component they might be, and then overlay that with being as efficient as we can on the production side. Now, perhaps we've got a break even that might work even in these not real exciting markets that we're looking at. But then, so we've done all we can on production, we've done at cost, and now we're looking at marketing opportunities. And as you've alluded to, that many times, most of the time, in the December corn futures contract, the prices in the first 6 months of the year are higher than the prices in the second 6 months of the year. So you get past the 4th of July, that first part of July, we typically see lower prices for that part of the season than the opportunities prior to that. Now, normally that would be associated with some kind of a rally in the market in April, May, and June. Well, there are years we don't get the rally. It's just still a better price. And then it just continued to fall for the rest of the year. Now, obviously, I can't predict what this year is going to be, but it may be that this is the kind of year that those rallies from, 450 to 460 up to 480, 485, that might be the rally that we're trying to capture. Those dimes, those 15 cents, and combine that. Is there anything we can do on the basis side to enhance or increase value to whoever you're delivering that grain to? Can we squeeze that extra nickel or dime out of the basis somehow? Whether when we deliver it, what we deliver, where they want it, are there ways that we can enhance value in that sense? And so that's kind of where I'm looking right now is nickels and dimes in these markets, small rallies, capturing perhaps a little better basis, and then obviously being as efficient and as productive as we can on the out in the field side, and overlay that against those marketing challenges.
Yeah, it's, I guess, one of the things I'd like to throw at you as well. It's just kind of thinking about, you mentioned basis in your previous comment here. And I think I want to back up on the 23 crop first and say, okay, there's assuming, and corn is the big one. It seems like, at least from what we see with our clients, there's not a lot of beans left.
Okay.
And, maybe the beans do have some opportunity because we don't, at least from the inventories we see with our clients, we're not seeing the inventories that we see with the corn. And I guess my question is how much threat do you think there is with basis? Because in some areas we've seen some quote unquote spring improvement. Guys get busy, sprayers start rolling, the co-ops get busy, they aren't trucking. So you end up having a typically a couple of week window where basis does improve and there's a chance to take advantage of that. And but it never fails. There's a day to price, the flat price, and then there's a day to set basis, and they never match up very good. So, talk a little bit about just managing that basis, because isn't there a threat here that all this corn's gonna like show up at the same time here at some point? You talked about the 4th of July. At what point does all this stuff show up? Because they got to get the
Yeah.
bins empty for another crop at some point.
Right. And I think that's one of the factors that may, but I'm it would be great to see a 50 cent rally on this market, but I think more that I think as your concerns would reflect that if we do start to see a little movement in these prices, we've got a lot of corn that could come to town that we can snuff out a rally pretty quickly. But there may be yet some opportunities, just as you were saying, of windows of opportunity that may be the difference this year of capturing that small advantage on the basis and paying attention to what's going on in the futures. Because you're exactly right, we're fixing to get really, really busy. So who in the operation is keeping their eye on this marketing ball while everybody else is out busy doing other stuff? And it may be those very narrow, short-lived marketing opportunities that give us a chance to just get that a little bit marginally better than what we might have done otherwise. And maybe that's spreading out some responsibilities of we're fixing to really be focused on doing other things, but yet now may be that time we could do something on the marketing side. So I think that's a that management challenge of keeping all those things in focus can be, if a single person is trying to do this, it can be very, very challenging. But if we can bring more people around the table, and more input around these kinds of challenges and decisions and monitoring these issues, I think it will put us in a position to likely be more successful in managing these challenges. Another piece of that would be if it is again more of a discussion rather than a single person responding to, say, making a marketing decision, I think we're less apt to have that be as much of an emotional decision. If I've got to explain to you why I did something, say it right out loud, and talk about things that are going on in the market, I think that brings in a sense of objectivity and hopefully a sense of rationality around what we do when we do it. We don't know what the market's going to do. And if we get some of that corn price, if we got a chance to do something, say at 480 on the board, that'd look pretty good right now. And if that was the worst sale that you made this year, hallelujah. I'd be glad to have let that 10, 20, 30% go at 480 if I was going to sell the rest of it to something better than that. And if it goes to 450 or 4.25, I'd be pretty glad I got at least something done. When I had that 480 rally, I got to step in and got a little something priced anyway. So
Well,
again, taking that kind of perspective.
I think too, on that 23 crop, what a lot of us have to do from an emotional standpoint, if there's bushels left, you have to look at the average price, not what you're selling those last bushels for, and just get over it. Who cares? We all care, but let it go, let it go. And just get your average price, call it good, because at least it always seems to me like, if you're sitting there trying to market two crops, it really gives you an opportunity to screw up the next one, because you're not focused on really what you need to be focused on. So with that said, I want to ask you kind of a final question here on the 2024. Back to kind of the first part of the conversation, I brought up, where that cost of production's at for that 24 crop. And I want to ask a question specifically with percent sales. Everybody's on the same side of the canoe. I think Dwayne Lowry was on last week, and he's like, all the Cub Scouts or Boy Scouts or whatever on the same side of the canoe. Is there a threat, do you think, that this market could have something, some horsepower behind it that we don't see? And if that is the case, is there a magic number? And I know there isn't, so I'm not trying to throw you under the bus, but is there a number that producers should maybe be thinking about? Okay, I'm done planting, I should be at 30%, or it's the 4th of July, I should be at 50%. And it needs to be correlated with your margin target or some level of profitability. I get that. So I'm going to shut up and just get your take on, if you put your farmer hat on, what makes Mark comfortable percent sold if you got that cost of production just a titch away from that $5 mark?
Sure. Well, and again, trying to apply some objectivity to answering that question. Going back, so over the last 20 or 25 years, again, if you look at the seasonal patterns on that December corn futures contract, the price the first half of the year is higher than the second half of the year about 70% of the time, about two-thirds. So by the time you break that market, the 4th of July, that's typically your worst half part of the market. But it's only about a third of the time. But what that would communicate to me then as a marketer is I want to be about two-thirds sold by the time I get to the end of June, that first week of July. That's my overall marketing target, two-thirds to 70% sold by the 4th of July. Now, when we, again, what does it mean we're always selling into a big strong rally? Like, last year, we had that big run-up right in the middle of June. Gave us, a great opportunity before we did fall off right at the end of the year. If you go back and look at the year I'm kind of monitoring this one against is 2014. And what was unusual about 2014 is our peak of that contract year. It didn't come in late June and the first part of July. It was in late April, early May. And then that was it. And then down we went for the rest of the year. And so these little rallies we're getting here at this time of year, this could be it. And again, one of the biggest impediments to doing something marketing-wise is, well, what if I sell 10 or 20% today and the market goes up? Well, that's what you want it to
Good.
do. You want it to
Good.
go up, exactly. You want to sell that 20% and you want to be wrong. Because the more wrong you are, the more money you're going to make. And again, it's getting our minds around that. and doesn't make it easy. And nobody wants to leave an opportunity on the table and sold something too cheap. But my concern is that with the productive capacity in the world today, if we have kind of a normal weather kind of market, we could have a big, big corn crop globally. Now, if I'm looking for something that would change that, a major weather issue anywhere. We're talking, South America, part of the major production area here in the U.S. Even obviously Ukraine and Russia, that conflict's not settled yet. And we're still relying heavily on grain exports from that part of the world. Those are the kind of things that could really, fuel a supply issue. But my concern is that we've got one of those kind of years that the weather does cooperate. We could have a big supply year. And with the economic headwinds we still face globally, and not only, we have some challenges here in the U.S., certainly in Western Europe, but in a major economy that depends on ag imports like China, how healthy is the Chinese economy? I think is a real question. And we should try to get our hands on. And the degree to which they may be limited in their continue to buy and import ag products. You mentioned canceling sales from Ukraine, canceling wheat sales from the U.S. If for whatever reason, they just don't need as much this year. I think the economic climate is one that impedes the growth in demand, and the productive environment with a more favorable weather outlook coming out of El Nino in the Northern Hemisphere, La Nina is good for the South. Right. The Southern Hemisphere benefits from a La Nina weather phenomenon, which is where we're headed. Mm-hmm. And so if we've got a big, I think the what I'm looking at for 2024 is an environment in which the growth and supply is outpacing the growth of demand, and that's a recipe for lower prices. And that's why these mini rallies, these 10 and 50 cent rallies, I really want to keep a close eye on those, especially if you combine that something with a basis opportunity that may not be an opportunity we want to ignore, given what the broader big picture looks like for commodities coming up this season.
Yeah, and from a risk management standpoint, is kind of a final comment here. I think a lot of people bought up on crop insurance too, on revenue protection. And I think there was a lot of people that bought up, ECO and utilized some of the add-ons up to 95% and things. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of protection out there too, that I think one of the lessons from 2023 was you bought that insurance so you had the wherewithal and the ability to make sales ahead of time and to, mm-hmm. To do that. I think the challenge this year is just kind of where the prices are at, but not every year do we always make money. And some years, and I hate to say this, but some years we have to limit losses too.
Right.
And so I literally hate saying that, but it's not a recommendation, but I think sometimes we have to look at it from that standpoint too, and be real with ourselves and say, okay, we bought protection. We've got risk mitigation here. We've got to take a little of this risk off the table. And that's an easy word to say and an easy statement, but you got to look at the cash flow. You got to look at your burn rate on working capital and all the financial impacts of not doing something versus doing something and saying, okay, can I tolerate this versus doing nothing versus what is the risk on the other side of the equation? And I wanted to lay that out there I want to give you the last word. What do you want to wrap up with? And I mean, we want to end up with something positive, I guess. But, go ahead, give you the last word.
Well, as we do go through the season, we get that crop coming out of the ground and reevaluate, say, where we are the middle of May or the middle of June. And yeah, so we're looking at that, break even that, sitting here today, we may be looking at, something in the range of, $4.90, maybe $5. Perhaps those prospects, maybe we got our inputs bought a little cheaper, a little more efficiently in our application rates, yield prospects. Now that break even, maybe it does look a little something a little closer, say, to 480, 475. Mm-hmm. But to evaluate the opportunities against that, that picture will change. And that's why I think it's so important to monitor that marketing outlook and opportunity relative to where you are on the cost side, because so many times, we work with so many producers that one don't know where they are cost wise mm-hmm. or keep up with how that is changing for the good or the bad. It can work against you the other way too.
Exactly.
But again, it takes a management monitoring effort and again, who in the outfit's keeping their eye on that, because mm-hmm. it's likely that the ultimate decision maker is probably really, really busy doing a lot of other stuff. particularly over the next about 30 days.
Yeah.
And so, you know, who can we bring into that conversation?
Yeah, it's fun to go drive the tractor. It's not as much fun to look at the markets right now.
Exactly. Most of us didn't get into this, because we enjoyed that side of it. Right.
Yeah. Sometimes the best time to make sales is when your hands are greasy and you're under the planter working on something. And you're like, I need to do that. The next day it goes down. You're like, I don't know why I didn't do that. But
right. Yeah, I meant to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. That's where offers come in. You know, it's exactly. You know, I took notes on what you said, and I'm going to apply a little bit of my key learnings from you, Mark, and in our own operation here. And I like a lot of the things you said, and really appreciate your time today. As always, a ton of wisdom. You do a lot of research and are a big part there at Texas A&M and being that marketing guru. Really appreciate it. And also the TPAP thing is really a big deal, and we'll get you back on again sometime. We'll update on the new things coming up with TPAP as well. So with that said, Mark, thank you.
Great. Thanks a lot, Chris. Good to be with you today.
Yep. Good to have you. And thanks everybody for listening. We'll catch you again next time on the AgView Pitch.